So hi, we are here with Ben from Microsoft Research, and today we're going to talk a lot about cut.net and a little bit of the architecture behind it. So hi, Ben, how are you?
Good.
So introduce yourself, you know, how long you've been here, what drove you into Microsoft Research?
So I'm Ben Lifshitz, I work at MSR. I've been here for the past 2 years or so. So I actually was involved with cat.net around the same time I started. My dissertation work was on analyzing web applications and finding security vulnerabilities in them. And so that was really my connection to cat.net.
Great. So a little bit about the concept of interprocedural data flow analysis, and which that's what actually drove you to work in the project. Can you tell us a little about how that contributed specifically to this tool?
Well, so I should probably start by talking about how sort of cat.net works in a very general sense. And so let's draw something on the board to make it clear. So at the heart of any tool like that, in the heart of pretty much any static analysis tool, there is an analysis engine. So in the case of cat.net, it takes a DLL or a few DLLs. Right? So it starts with a bunch of DLLs right here. And that goes into the analysis engine. And then on top of that, there is also a specification of what to look for. And then at the end of the day, what you get is a bunch of warnings. And this architecture is pretty much specific to any static analysis tool you can imagine. It doesn't have to be security. In the case of security, which is the focus of cat.net, these are going to be vulnerabilities for the analyst or developer to review and assess. Now, this still works on .NET DLL. This is why we have DLLs here. We could have had, I don't know, source files or x86 code, conceivably. Now, the focus of the analysis here is finding what's known as information flow vulnerabilities. And so some well-known vulnerabilities in this space are things like, you know, SQL injection, cross-site scripting, cross-site request forgery, and so on and so forth. And these things essentially have a lot in common, which is to say that all of them are information flow vulnerabilities. So the problem is that you have some sort of untrusted input and it goes to a place it shouldn't go. Or the other way around, you have something that whose confidentiality you want to preserve, some, you know, stuff from a database, for instance, and you send it out. So that would be an information leak. But for all of these vulnerabilities, the name of the game is to essentially follow flow throughout the application. And you need to do so across procedures, really. This is where interprocedural analysis comes in. So my involvement back in the day with the, you know, cat.net analysis guys was to improve the quality of analysis that they were doing interprocedural, and also to do some benchmarking. So we developed a suite of benchmarks to measure the sort of the precision of this engine and also the recall, how many vulnerabilities it was able to find in some difficult corner cases.
What about the precision right now on cut.net and where it stands right now, as far as, like, let's say, false positives and, like, negatives?
Well, so to step back for a second, I mean, really, this architecture, like I said earlier, is really something very common to any sort of static analysis tool. Right? And once you have this, the next discussion you need to have is what's going on with with false positives and false negatives, right? And so if we look at it a little bit more systematically, basically we can sort of look at a range of tools. And let's kind of plot this over here. So this is false positives over here, and this is false negatives over here. Okay, and so we have sort of these high and low quadrants. So this is low. This is high, this is low, this is high. Okay, so if you have, what's the ideal situation? The ideal situation is you have something that has basically no or very few false positives and very few false negatives. So this is really the best of all worlds here. The problem, of course, is that to get to this place, you really need to have a tool that's very difficult to scale. The computational power is genuinely not there. And so what happens in practice is that tools sacrifice one or the other.
Okay.
And generally, the one that gets sacrificed is for false negatives. So that these tools don't really try to find all vulnerabilities. The observation that's often been made is that if you have a tool that produces tons and tons of false positives, sooner or later developers will basically stop using it. So the goal is to find some sort of a middle ground. So we want to be, well, not only us really, but CatNet falls into basically this category over here. It has so low false positives and probably somewhat high false negatives.
Okay.
So CatNet is probably somewhere over here. And the goal is to move it as close this way as possible.
I see.
Right? So we might start with something that has still a low rate of false positives, which is maybe 10% or 20% or 15% somewhere in that range. And then we'll try to adjust the analysis engine over here to the degree that will make it not generate a lot of false negatives, which is to say it's not going to miss a lot of bugs. That's really one of the goals of benchmarking in the first place, because you go and create a very difficult sort of challenge test suite and throw it at the tool and figure out what problems are being missed, what vulnerabilities are being missed. And then you adjust your engine and sort of this process continues.
Good. Can you provide us an example on how the information flows and how the tool can spot, or let's say the analysis behind it can spot, okay, here's a bug?
Yeah, so we can sort of try to have this. Let me start with a simple example, and let me just kind of set it up first, and then we can look at several iterations of this example. So what I'm going to show is going to be kind of this very simple kind of prototypical vulnerability in your C-sharp application. So suppose you some sort of a process method over here that takes two values, HTTP request and an HTTP response. Okay, and so suppose you have a piece of code that looks like this. So you say string, s is request, I forget the APIs now, but I think it's called get parameter. And then the name of the parameter, so it's name. So what this is going to do is it's going to go and look at the request and get the parameter by this name. In this case, it's going to be, say, the user's first name or something like that. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so this is a sort of typical tainted parameter, something that you get from the outside, you know nothing about, and therefore you shouldn't trust. And then the second one, we're going to say, so this response over here, say a response, with Jack right here.
I won't be here.
Or maybe we should say, yeah, I think this is probably good enough. So the location of this redirect is directly controlled by what you get over here, and this is your typical sort of vulnerability pattern that you have. Okay? So you can imagine, looking for this, using grep or something. This is very simple, right? So, because everything here happens locally. So you get this string here, and then you send it to this redirect method. So this is your source over here. This is your sync. And the problem, of course, is that there is no sanitization that happens in between these two. Generally, the way you would do it is you would take something from a source, but before using it in any sort of way, you would proceed to sanitize it using a library like, NTXSS or something like that. Okay, so far so good. And so you can imagine that for static analysis to find a problem like this is actually not a big deal.
Okay.
Now, let's try to make this slightly more complex. So let's try to make this a little bit more complicated. So far this was straight line code. Okay, so let's take this up. Let's keep the source over here, but let's move this around a little bit. So suppose now we have a condition over here. So we say if some predicate P over here, we're going to say response dot redirect. Yes. Okay. So the interesting thing is that static analysis will still be able to find it, right? So this is going to be under conditional, but there is a path, in fact, taking you from this line over here and then to this line over here. So static analysis, the strength of it is that you don't need to run anything, right? It will consider, generally, it will try to consider all execution paths, and particularly it will find out. Okay, so far, so good. So it's not really that much more complicated. Now, let's try to put this under predicate as well. So suppose we take this out, and then declare, we need to declare S and S. So we say string S. It's null, for instance, right here. And then we say if something, then we say S is equal to request get parameter. Name. Okay? And this is the end of the day. So here's an interesting observation, right? So suppose these predicates over here contradict. So suppose this is P and this is not P. They're exactly the opposite of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Then basically there's no path that would take you here and then there. Right, the static analysis, unless you keep track of predicates, which is really quite expensive to do, is going to foolishly assume that there is such a path and going to report a vulnerability. And so this is kind of your prototypical example why there might be imprecision to do static analysis. And imprecision in your analysis engine over here is basically what leads to imprecision later down the line when you get false positives.
I see.
So that's one example. So here's another one. So in this one, by the way, was entirely intra-procedural, so meaning within a single procedure, right? So let's try to make it a little bit more complicated. So here's another source of imprecision that's really quite common, which is suppose we get, let's try to modify this example. So we'll keep the source, just like before. But suppose you have some sort of a global array. So a static element of a class, for instance, right? So suppose we have a string array. Right? Page. And we allocate it somewhere. So what we do here is we say A sub I is going to be S. Alright, so what happened just now? So we have the stated value with here, S, right? And then we stuff it into an array. And then suppose this global array is used in a variety of different settings, in a variety of different procedures. So it might be A sub J, and then A sub K, and then plus L, who knows what's going on. And we're going to use it throughout the program.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem was this, right? So conservatively, if we want to be conservative, we need to assume that basically this value can flow to any of those users. Right? Even though in practice we kind of know that, you know, those indices are probably going to be different, and maybe this is, will be redefined on the next slide, for instance. You know, you can say A sub I is equal to null at the end of this procedure, for instance. But in order to be conservative, analysis will probably conclude that all these users can potentially refer to tainted values.
Mm-hmm.
And again, just as before, this little imprecision is going to escalate. So this imprecision in the analysis will lead to false positives over here. And that's kind of the problem. And so in some sense, we're kind of between a rock and a hard place, right? So we cannot genuinely prove that this use is not going to actually refer to this value. Why? Because it's actually quite difficult to reason about indices of arrays and things like that. You don't need to have quite a bit of machinery developed to be able to do that. And if you have that, it's quite difficult to scale. So generally speaking, you know, analysis like this will probably punt on this issue. So what's going to happen in the case of cat.net, most likely, is that it's probably going to disregard this as a potential flow from this variable S over here to whatever context this is used in over here.
I don't know where that other system is.
And so this is really this choice kind of playing out, right? So we might, in fact, miss some false negatives because of not analyzing that precisely, but at the same time, we know that if we were to be conservative over here, we'll probably introduce a whole bunch of false positives, which will you know, basically take us to this quadrant over here. And this is exactly what we don't want to
do. We are avoiding, yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, this will hopefully give you some idea of what...
So Ben, can you tell us, you know, what Microsoft Research is doing, like, you know, as far as, like, this type of procedures and, like, other projects regarding that?
Well, so there are a couple of efforts in this space. So one thing that we are trying to help CAD.NET with is in terms of improving precision. Some of the things that I already talked about, making them a little bit more systematic. The other thing is also hoping to make the analysis engine a little bit more scalable, because this is apparently what developers want. Now, the third effort, which is what I'm mostly involved in these days, is figuring out better specifications for analysis. So I mentioned this before, but there's this kind of missing piece that I have on the board, but I haven't really talked about very much, which is the specification that, along with the program itself, goes into the analysis engine. And in the case of problems like SQL injection, cross-site scripting, and the like, the specification is basically the following. So the analysis engine needs to know about sources, sanitizers, and sinks that the application or its libraries use. And the problem is that capturing that information is actually not that easy. It's very easy to, in fact, miss an important source or a sink. And, you know, the more you miss, the fewer bugs you generally find. And so because it's such a tricky problem in practice, we developed statistical inference techniques to actually enhance the quality of the specification that CAD.NET rather uses. So we can start with this unusual specification that CAD.NET is distributed with, and then can actually enhance it further. And so the side effect of that is that in addition to the warnings, in addition to the vulnerabilities you would have found before, you're able to find a whole bunch more. And some of them are actually specific to your application that you're analyzing, meaning that CAD.NET developers don't really have any way to know what your application specific specification might be, but we can actually infer it from the application code itself, thereby giving you better results in terms of the warnings. And so our hope is to integrate that into a future release of CAD.NET in the near future.
That's good. This has been really helpful. Thanks. Any other thoughts you want to share about CAD.NET? No, it's fine. So thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we can, you know, educate our audience a little bit more about that.
Great.
So
thank you very much.
Thanks.